A very busy weekend. The nation and much of the world, in fact, was watching the Duval County Courthouse and a split decision when the verdict came down. What was your reaction?
Bittersweet. You know, I think this case has been very emotional for everyone involved. And to see that Michael Dunn will be, you know, fortunately spending the rest of his life behind bars is, you know, certainly something to be excited about. But it also gives you pause at the same time, because as you mentioned, you know, for the most serious offense, for you know, killing, you know, an unarmed teen, there was a hung jury. So I think for a lot of folks, it's mixed emotion. And, you know, Jordan Davis's mother, of course, said it best. You know, she has a little bit of closure.
Here is Jordan's father, Ron Davis, speaking to reporters after the verdict. He said young black men should not have to constantly worry about others fearing them based on cultural stereotypes. Listen.
They shouldn't live in fear and walk around the streets worrying about if someone has a problem with somebody else, that if they get shot, it's just collateral damage.
He sees his son as collateral damage in this fear and distrust between cultures. What were your feelings as you listened to the father of Jordan Davis?
You know, again, that's the bitterness attached to it. It's very, very sad to hear, obviously, the pain in his voice, to not feel completely realizing that justice, and then also to recognize that here's someone who still to this day has not truly admitted, you know, guilt in shooting, you know, Jordan Davis, and also justifying the need to pull out his gun that evening and shoot 10 shots. And of course, there's this fear that a lot more folks are starting to talk about, this sort of clutch your purse fear, or this, you know, as Trayvon Martin's parents even said, this imaginary fear attached to, you know, black males who are just walking around doing their everyday things, living their lives just like everyone else.
549-2937, we'll go to your calls as you give us your thoughts about the verdict in the Michael Dunn trial in just a few minutes. At least one juror apparently did believe, though, that Michael Dunn felt genuine fear and that he felt he was defending himself.
And that's important. I think that reflects sort of the larger sort of ideological sort of disconnect between folks walking around. And a lot of people are trying to make this speculation or speculating that race sort of creeped into the tensions connected to the jurors. We don't know yet. We may never know. The jurors may never come forward. But absolutely, the first degree murder charge, of course, carries this idea of premeditation. And clearly there were folks who could not agree, or at least one person who thought that, you know, Dunn was justified in being fearful that evening. So that speaks volumes to where we are.
The state's attorney's office says they'll retry Dunn on this first-degree murder charge. It's a mistrial on just that one count. What's your reaction to those who, angry about the verdict, have said, well, perhaps the state's attorney's office shouldn't have gone for first-degree murder. They should have just gone for second-degree murder or manslaughter. There must have been some jurors felt that premeditated murder was a bridge too far.
Yeah, and, you know, there have been a lot of folks who are, particularly in the legal community and outside the legal community, who are, you know, words of, you know, connected to overcharging or sort of swirling. And, you know, as an attorney, I can't necessarily make, you know, comment here on that. Although we've heard some of the same things during the Zimmerman case, you know, that perhaps first-degree murder was a bit much, and had we gone for maybe second-degree or manslaughter, you know, Michael Dunn would have been convicted there.
On the flip side of that, though, the state's attorney's office could point to any number of cases that they've tried where they did level these same charges and the person was convicted.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the players involved here, the nuances of this particular case, and again, you know, Jordan Davis, unfortunately, wasn't here to testify. So that leaves a lot of room for ambiguity and of course, reasonable doubt.
And lots of calls. Meanwhile, what was your reaction over the weekend as we heard the verdict in the murder trial of Michael Dunn and the shooting death of 17-year-old Jordan Davis? Let us know your thoughts and feelings about this morning. People talking about this still all over the country. 549-2937. Let's begin with Nick on the North Side. Hello, Nick. Good morning.
Morning. 2 points. One is that it's obvious that Michael Dunn would not have killed Jordan Davis had the no retreat law been in effect. He obviously thought that he was going to be able to get away with this, and that's why he did it. And if you listen to his defense, it's quite clear that that was his thinking, that he was going to say that he felt threatened and that was going to allow him to get away with murder. On the other hand, your guest just mentioned something a minute ago that the deceased father brought it up that white people shouldn't be afraid of black people. The fact is that white people are afraid of black people, and that's, you know, there are a lot of people out here that have that fear, and that's the reason for the law. And until we can start to talk about this, we'll never be able to unpack all the misunderstandings and problems that exist between the two races. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Nick. On March 3rd, there's going to be a rally in Tallahassee as activists who are angry about Florida's Stand Your Ground law make their case that the law should be revamped or thrown out. Congresswoman Kareem Brown is slated to take part in that. What would you say to those who they see Stand Your Ground through their own prism, their own life experience, both black and white?
Absolutely. And, you know, we can't help but sort of insert race into this, really important controversial law. And I think that we're going to be continuing to racialize Stand Your Ground for a while, given that there is a retrial, and then also given that Marissa Alexander's case is coming up in July. I think that we are not going to be able to get away with not talking about the implications and the racial implications. We need to continue this dialogue, and these cases are going to force us to do that.
And force, I think, is the right word, because people are extremely uncomfortable discussing these issues with each other, aren't they?
Absolutely. And the more uncomfortable they get, the more we're going to have cases like this, because every time we try to sidestep race, that elephant in the room just gets larger and larger and larger. And I think that people are starting to recognize. And it's interesting because the racial dialogue attached to this case initially was kind of subdued. And I think over the past 48 hours, it is basically saturated social media and the national, and people in the outside of our state have really sort of, you know, jumped on the bandwagon and kind of, you know, clearly making their concern and outrage, of course, sort of heard. It's important for us to continue these conversations, and we seem to have the bullseye and the target in the state of Florida and here in Jacksonville on that.
We want to continue the conversation here on First Coast Connect this morning, and we want your calls. Lots of folks waiting on hold. The number is 549-2937. We have an alternate juror from the Dunn trial on the line. Hello, good morning. Are you still there? I guess they hung up. They didn't want to give their name, but it was an alternate juror from the Dunn case. If you can, give us a call back. Let's go to Diane on the South Side. Hello, Diane. Thanks for your call.
Hi, thanks for the show. It's very interesting. My comment, actually, I kind of want to add to the gentleman's comment who spoke in earlier, who said that, you know, it's just a fact that white people are afraid of black people. I don't think that's a fair statement at all. I've lived all over. I've been around all kinds of people, and I don't fear people. What I fear are people's actions. And these kids who turn up their whoopers in their cars and parade around town and everything at all hours, they do so to make a statement. And the statement is, hey, you know, look at me, I'm cool, I'm this, I'm that. And if you have ever even attempted to ask one of these kids to turn their music down, it doesn't matter how nice you are, you are practically attacked. I mean, you are just verbally attacked. And it's ridiculous. So I can understand the shooter's initial fear. I can't understand shooting someone, but I can understand the fear, because you are always verbally attacked by these kids. And I've also spoken to a JSO officer I happened to run into in a sandwich shop and asked why these kids aren't. Or anyone really of any age who has their music playing so loud, why they aren't stopped, why they aren't ticketed, because it is a violation of our quiet laws that we do have here in Jacksonville and Duval, all of Duval County. And I was told by the officer, number one, that there's only one car that's assigned to the entire county every day to traffic traffic violations like this. And number two, they can never tell which vehicle is the offending vehicle, to which I just said, you know, let me just help you out. It's the car with the windows down, no matter how hot, no matter how cold it is. It's not that hard. So I think, you know, part of the blame for what has happened actually should go back on JSO for not doing their jobs in the first place, making sure that these kids are following the, you know, the quiet laws that we all the rest of us follow. And plus, I mean, you know, it's just it's rude. It's just, you know, I don't know. And their reaction is always an over reaction. So, you know, what to do about it, I don't know. I just look to the police to help us with staving off something like this in the future. That's my comment.
Diane, thanks. Lots to discuss in her call. All right. Let's begin with the some residents feeling that the JSO should do a better job of policing loud and rowdy teenage kids. The JSO would put that back on the taxpayers. They would say, if you want more police presence to ticket minor offenses, you got to pay more in taxes. Most people don't want to do that. That's one element of this. But what about her other comments?
Well, you know, this idea that all the kids using, you know, kind of a blanket statement to say that all the kids who are doing this are rude and verbal attacking, and that their overreaction is probably, exaggerated and extreme. I would even sort of, you know, set forth that perhaps some folks' reaction to the music is over-exaggerated and extreme. And if there is a real fear of someone playing their music loud, then why would you escalate things and, you know, your fear by saying something? I think the easiest thing that Michael Dunn could have, you know, perhaps done that evening after he mentioned something was, and you know, to keep it moving. You know, he was at a gas station and you know, listen, I play my music loud and it really isn't about the music. It's about the kind of music and the teenagers who were there. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. If those kids were playing classical music extremely loud, I don't think we would be here. And if it were perhaps a group of white teenagers playing, you know, quote unquote, gangsta music, which I don't think that's what it is, but that's how it's been characterized, I don't think we'd be here either. I think it's completely attached to the race of the folks who were involved. And that is, of course, what escalates the fear.
And we want to know your thoughts this morning. Give us a call at 549-2937 as we discuss the outcome of the Dunn trial. David at the Beaches is on hold. Hey, David, you're on the air now. Good morning, David.
Hi. I had a couple of comments on the Dunn incident. I don't know about it getting off on first-degree murder, but... firstly, Stand Your Ground doesn't have any role here, and I'm really amazed that it continues to occupy the newspapers and the airwaves. Self-defense isn't going to be eliminated when they discontinue or repeal the Stand Your Ground law. And if he was in fear of his life, you know, he would have had a defense without Stand Your Ground. That never was mentioned in the trial, although I understand that he took an attitude on the stand consistent with it. That's not the issue. The second, which pains me greatly, was just mentioned. We have an abysmal racial history. It's so delicate to deal with. There's so much pain and history involved. But clearly, any young men, group of young men, doing anything that is asocial are frightening to citizens, whether they're black or white. And four black teenagers acting anti-socially frighten black people just like they frighten white people. There is a racial issue, but I'm not wise enough to be able to pull it out. The youth is more of the bias here, though. in my humble opinion. And I'll wait for your comment.
All right, David. Thank you for that. That's David out at the Beaches. You know, he mentioned that the Stand Your Ground statute wasn't part of the trial. However, it was part of the jury instructions. They were the jurors were instructed to consider that statute. No way of knowing if that played a part in the hung jury on the murder one.
Right, and I think we can only speculate that that probably did in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, absolutely so. Stand Your Ground was not employed as a defense. However, self-defense was. So I think that's the real issue attached to it is, you know, was Mr. Dunn justified in feeling fearful of his life?
And lots of tweets coming in. David tweets the show, white privilege wins again. Another tweet, racist. Some of your callers are racist. Loud music does not rise to murder. Let's go to Lyle on the north side with his thoughts. Hello, Lyle. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. I'm a 45-year-old African-American born and raised here in Jacksonville. You know, I hate to hear the loud music rattling trunks and so forth and so on. It offends me as well as anybody. Simple fact is, Mr. Dunn, sitting there in his car, without a gun in his glove box, mum would have been the word. But with the gun, he was emboldened to make a comment. And, of course, it escalated from there. That points to me the mindset that's growing, I think, and largely because of what happened, I think, with Zimmerman case. But before that, you know, the Stand Your Ground law says if you feel threatened, you're able to defend yourself to the extent that he did. If you feel that your life is in jeopardy or whatever. Police officers have been trained at what they do. And they have difficulty with this same issue and many times have used excessive force and have killed people unjustifiably. We have placed the same power in the hands of people with these weapons by saying that the Stand Your Ground law allows them to react that way when they feel threatened. I think it is ridiculous the way the law is framed, and it definitely has to be repealed or revamped or whatever. So those are just some of my thoughts.
Thank you, Lyle. There have been several cases recently, not just the Zimmerman case or the Dunn case. There was another case over in Tampa, Dr. Wilder, where a retired police officer shot another moviegoer because he was angry that the man was texting during the movie previews. They began an argument, and then the next thing you know, you've got a dead body in the movie theater. And so all of these cases together, how they're playing out across the country and to foreign audiences, you know, folks overseas, particularly in Great Britain and Europe, they're reading this. The image that it's presenting of Florida is not a good one.
No, Floridians appear to be very emotional, gun-toting folks who have no problem, shooting people at any given moment.
And you could argue, well, these are just a few sensational cases. You could make that argument.
We could. And they really are a few sensational cases. However, I think it's really important to think about, Jordan Davis's parents really want the focus to be on guns. And that's really important here.
His mother in particular, Lucia McBath, has become an activist on the issue. Here's an email from Sheila. My lasting impression of the trial, the parents of Jordan Davis, tremendous restraint, strength, and dignity. Peace to them. Mike on the South Side has some thoughts. Hello, Mike. How are you today?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I think one of the biggest misnomers is the word racist. Whenever you put "ist" on the end of a word, it usually means you're for it. For example, Buddhist means you're pro-Buddha. And I think this is turning into a wrong way of approaching this. It's like white people in general are tired of black behavior, meaning on a whole. Gentleman that called earlier, African American with some Erdogan and educational and a little stature to his demeanor. On a whole, again, there's individuals or not, on a whole, black people do act belligerent. You know what I mean? When it comes to, hey, can you turn the radio down? She brought up the fact that if you're a white individual, it wouldn't happen. Well, a white individual actually probably would have turned the radio down.
Well, you're making some huge sweeping generalizations, Mike.
Go ahead. And what are those?
Well, you're saying an entire race of people is prone to act a certain way.
I'm saying stereotypes exist for reasons. And I'm saying on the whole, I mean, that's not saying all black people go around thugging it, but a very high percentage do. And so the black community sits there and goes, oh, wait a minute, this isn't the right way. You know what I mean? They're so tough in defending their cause. And I'm white, and I believe in defending my cause as a white person. Okay, I am racist, meaning I'm for white people. I mean, I hate black people. This means in the scheme of the hierarchy of society, white people have a little more pull or motivation with me than black person would, because I'm more for my people than I am for another race. And you see it all the time. Hey, black pride. Hey, Chinese
all right.
stick together. There is a cohesion among...
Mike,
go ahead.
Thanks. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, as a sociologist, I can tell you, someone who has a doctorate in sociology and has been trained and studies race, racist is not someone who has pride about their group. It is someone who combines thought and action based upon negative stereotypes and discriminatory behavior. So, you know, that caller clearly was racist in his viewpoints about African Americans and black folks. And in the same way in which he feels that white people are tired of black behavior, I would argue that there are some black folks who are tired of white folks who exhibit that kind of behavior. We don't want to, this is a polarizing issue. It's really important for us to recognize that this wasn't just a black and white issue. There are plenty of white folks out there who are completely outraged and, you know, just as upset as African-American people. And not all white people are racist, and not all white people felt that Michael Dunn should be walking today. So that's really important to understand. But those kinds of statements that we just heard continue to make this issue so difficult to talk about and so tense, because you have those kinds of uneducated, you know, belief systems out there that really make it hard to talk about the reality of race.
But as you said a few moments ago, if people don't sit down and talk and listen to someone else's point of view, which you might find offensive, there really is no progress that's ever made.
Absolutely. And that's why we are where we are, because of the extreme viewpoints of folks and their inability to be open to hearing others.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.